Welcome to the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Jeff Dyckman here alongside Scott Pritchard from the Ontario PGA. And here we are in the studio, Scott, at On Purpose Productions. You're listening to us on the podcast at golfnewsnow.ca or cpj.com. And Scotty, two great guests, a friend of ours, Mr. Kenny Tarling. Where's Kenny? Kenny got his own golf academy now, I believe.
Sleepy Hollow in Stouffville.
Sleepy Hollow, Stouffville. One of the greatest players in Ontario PGA history, Canadian PGA. He's done well. He's knocking at the door for the senior championship. I think he might get it some year. You never know.
Yeah.
But he's a phenomenal guy. He just won one of your big events. Tell us about what happened.
Ontario PGA Seniors Championship, third year in a row he's won it.
Hat-trick.
Yeah, three-time champion, joins Gar Hamilton, John Henrik, and the great Mo Norman as the only three-time champions. He actually beat Billy Wagdon in a playoff, first hole of the playoff. Billy unfortunately made bogey. Ken made a great par, but I was sort of mixed, actually. Like, it was funny. I was doing some filming of the event, and I was trying to zoom in, and I felt my fingers shaking because I was so nervous for the players. Because
wow.
I'm good friends with both Bill and Ken, and it would be a great story to see Bill
sure.
won, you know, a club pro of the year last year in Canada, and you know, a really good player, and he's really just started to find his own now that he's a senior. And so I was torn, you know. They're both good friends, and at the end of the day, Ken's a great champion. You know, it's sometimes good to see a mix up, but you know, no complaints at all. It was a great event. You know, I think Bill definitely learned from it, and he's a force to be reckoned with, definitely, as time progresses.
You know, it seems like, I know Ken's won a few times, and so has Rick Willem, but mm-hmm. it seems like in Ontario, every week someone else can win. It seems like these guys are playing strong golf, and they're playing with guys that are younger than them sometimes,
yeah.
and the senior circuit as well, but pretty neat to watch. But our second guest will be Brent McLaughlin, Director of Rules, Amateur Status, Competitions. He's got a pretty big job over there, a young guy who's doing well for himself and really, I think, changing the face and the atmosphere in terms of around the rules of golf. And you were involved a little bit with that, Scotty. You're a rules official yourself. And, you know, can you sense that kind of wave of change coming, you know, with some of the older, I don't mean this in a bad way, but some of the older school rules officials and all of a sudden some more new age type people mm-hmm. that are starting to get involved?
Yeah, and, you know, quite frankly, I'd like to see more younger guys definitely get involved. But, yeah, you're seeing it. You're seeing the – and I'm sure Brent will talk about it, but you know, you're seeing the rule seminars become more interactive, and there's really, they're doing really good things over there. And I'm sure, like I said, Brent will tell us all about it.
Yeah, for sure. We just finished up wrapping up our Canadian PGA Women's Championship presented by Nike Golf and at Burlington Golf Country Club. Phenomenal venue. Some of the girls couldn't believe it.
Is that because you're getting married there? Or?
I'm getting married there as well. Good call, Scotty. Actually, a year to the day getting married. So I told them, if you guys give me a nice wedding price, I'll give you a PGA event. No, we had that booked for a while. But a great event. And it's the Laura Bavard of Gros Eel, Michigan, won. It was wild. Like she showed up blind. She came to the golf course, showed up blind first day, plays the golf course, never been there before. Her friend actually said, why don't you come caddy for me in Canada? And she goes, well, what's going on? She's like, oh, we're playing this national championship, Canadian PGA. And she goes, well, can I play too? And she's like, yeah, you probably could. Why don't you call the office and see if you can play? And this was about 2 weeks ago before the deadline. And so we signed her up and she shows up blind and tees it up on the Tuesday morning and shoots 65.
Now, would she be a player to watch going into it? Like, what's the deal with, like,
she's a features tour player.
But she's going to come caddy. Like, how come she wouldn't know about it?
Her best friend, who she beat by a shot in our event,
right?
She's caddying for Lisa Ferrero. In Portland, Oregon at the Safeway Classic, and then the CN Women's Open. She has a spot in both. So she thought, there's no more features tour events, I believe, for another few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So she thought, oh, I'll just go back home to Michigan, pack it in. But she, you know, she won the 2007-2008 Michigan Women's Amateur, and Michigan's a pretty strong golfing state mm-hmm. that is probably a pretty good talent. And she's played okay on the features tour and just kind of showed up and got hot in a hurry. And on day two, she was getting chased down by Sima Sedaker of Toronto and Big Break. Jessica Shepley birdied three or four holes in a row and had a big gallery there. And it was pretty neat to watch. I think by the 12th hole, there was about a 5 or 6 car pileup. There was six girls all there right in the hunt.
Yeah.
And last hole, she just made a 5-foot par putt, tough 18th holer at Burlington, and big crowd right on the patio there. And she won. So she's pretty excited about it, but really neat event. We got tons of press on it. Stephanie Sherlock and Sue Kim, two of Team Canada's probably greatest talents since Lori Kane, Lana Sharp have turned pro and turned pro for our event. And Sue Kim is under the radar. That this girl's unbelievable. She rarely makes any bogeys. She never makes double bogey ever. And she just, you know, just kind of puts along one of the greatest short games of all time. And she finished third, make a huge par save in the last hole to finish in a log jam for third. And she picks up $4,100 in her first paycheck.
Some debate
Yep.
19 years old, forgoes college, turns pro.
Yeah. And she said, there was an interview and she said, I realized that college isn't the thing for me, whatever that means. So I think a lot of people are kind of saying, is this the right thing? Because, you know, she has won, she's won a couple of pro events. She's won a couple of CN Tour events. We would have pocketed probably 20 grand for that. Is that the same as LPGA Tour events? Not really.
No.
Actually, not at all. I mean, not at all.
The reality is, you know, unfortunately, is the opportunity for women golf professionals is
LPGA or bust, basically.
Yeah, it's so tough.
Yeah.
And I just, it's sad to me in some respects. And don't get me wrong, I wish her all the best. I hope she blows the doors off and does an awesome job. But I just wish that, you know, look at that Michael Glickick same type of deal. Like, I wish they would have got a safety net. Well, at least do community college or something. Yeah. Like, hopefully she's going to do schooling. You know, we never know. Hopefully she's going to go to school on the side.
You know, her one of her best friends, Stephanie Sherlock, who's also a Team Canada's turned pro, and she finished, I think, 10th this week. She went to school and won 8 times NCAA.
Right.
Won, just finished 4th in basically the biggest amateur event in women's golf in the world, US Women's Amateur. She finished 4th. You know, so here's a, I think she helped get Sue into that school because Sue was going to that school as well for a semester and kind of helped her get in there. And now they're both turned pro on the same day. And
so hold on. Sue actually went to school already and then.
No, for one semester. One semester and then packed it in. Down. Yeah. And Sue was joking around that she actually turned pro 3 minutes before Stephanie did because Steph was getting something out of the car and Sue came to our registration desk first and registered. So she was pro. So she's joking around about that. But that might help them help each other kind of. They can travel together. They can do certain things. But I see Sherlock is probably having some better finishes if she gets the LPGA Tour because she's got a really aggressive game and makes a pile of birdies. And I think that Sue might be out there longer, though. Sue might make every single cut, and she might just kind of finish 30th, finish 40th. And, you know, she has that kind of game where she'll just be almost like a Dave Barr in a way where she just, you know, keep making cuts, never get in any trouble and see what happens, right?
Yeah, but good luck to her. I wish her all the best.
Two great talents. But speaking of great talents, Scotty, our first guest, Mr. Kenny Tarling, he's from Sanford sometimes. He's from, what's the place? Grimsby?
Grimsby.
It's funny. Whenever you guys.
The Peninsula.
Whenever you guys do a story of some sort, the Grimsby something picks it up.
Yeah.
What is it? The Grimsby.
Well, St. Catherine Standard.
Yeah.
And
they love this guy.
Yeah. The Grimsby.
Whatever it's called. Anyway, so
like the Grimsby record or something.
That's right. So when we come back, Scotty, we'll get on our friend, Mr. Kenny Tarling. Tell us about playing with Mo. Got to have a good Mo story for sure.
Hopefully.
Playing with Mo, about winning this event, and about also the seniors, the Canadian PGA Senior Championship, about playing with those guys, Mo, Dave Barr and Jimmy Rutledge, when we come back on the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Welcome back to the Canadian PGA Radio Show. Jeff Dykeman here alongside Scott Pritcher. And joining us now, Scotty, our friend, one of your very good friends, actually, Mr. Kenny Tarling. Phenomenal guy, a great player. And how about, I think it was it yesterday or the day before?
Yesterday.
He pulled it out again, completes the hat trick. Tell us a bit about what Mr. Tarling did.
Well, Ken becomes only the 4th player in the history of the Ontario PGA Senior Championship to win it 3 times. The other gentlemen are Mr. John Henrik, Canadian Golf Hall of Famer Mo Norman, and future Hall of Famer Gar Hamilton.
Wow.
And pretty big accomplishment for Ken, wouldn't you say, Ken, the fact that Mo, one of your mentors and heroes, you know, has won it 3 times in the past as well, and Gar Hamilton for that matter.
Yeah, I think it's great, obviously, to be included in that company. You know, I played a lot with Mo over the years, as I mentioned at the presentation ceremony that I came into Toronto back in the day when I was playing on the tour and used to play with Mo. I came into Toronto to watch Mo compete in the Ontario Seniors. So, you know, 20 years later, here I am playing in it myself. So that was pretty neat. And, of course, I've worked with Gar on my own game for a long time as well, and he's the captain of our Ontario Quebec team. So I have a close relationship with Gar as well.
Ken, tell us about, I think you won the playoff against Billy Wogden. I was watching some of Scott's press releases and videos, and I believe you mentioned in there that the course, Maple Downs, which is a phenomenal golf course, is a course that you had some challenges with before. How do you get over that? I mean, for the average golfer who knows they've got to play in a certain tournament every year and they want to go because their buddies are all there, but the course doesn't really fit their eye, how do you overcome that?
Well, the golf course is, for me, it's challenging because the greens have a lot of slope to them. They have a lot of speed. And I seem to struggle with courses where there can be movement in the last 3 feet of the hole where the ball's outside of the hole. a significant amount. And because my pace has to be so much stronger, and as well as the reading of the line. So to overcome it, you know, I worked on my own putting green at home that I have. I have a synthetic surface that stimps at 12.5. So I use it in preparing. And also I just changed up my game plan as to how I played the various holes. Sometimes I used to take different lines off the tee and try to be a little bit more precise or fine with the shots. And then this time I decided to not do that, to pick wider targets. And for the most part, my strategy worked well. I really only pulled one bad club off a tee in the tournament. And quite frankly, it was because we played a deck that I wasn't prepared for mentally beforehand. I thought we were going to play a different deck, and I didn't have a good plan for that particular deck. So other than that, though, that's all I did. I visualized how I was going to play the holes based on my new strategy and practiced on my putting green at home to get used to those kinds of speeds.
Well, Ken, I'm glad you didn't blame me for that deck position. Thanks for that. But tell the story you've told about Gus Maui and, you know, how you were back in the day. You were an up-and-coming player, much like you are now in the revived senior division. But you've told that story to me, and I've alluded to it a few times. But why don't you tell that story front to back? Because I think it's a pretty good story about your experience at Maple Downs with Mr. Maui.
Well, I was playing, it was back in the days when I was playing on the tour, and we had an Ontario PGA event at Maple Downs, and I had to withdraw from the event because there was a conflict with a Canadian Tour event, and so I pulled out of the event at Maple Downs, and then as it happened, they had bad weather, and so they couldn't play the event at Maple Downs that day, and the rescheduled date worked for me, so I was able to re-enter into the event, and when I called Heather, actually, at the office, she asked me who I wanted to play with because there was some open tee times, and one of the times it was open had Gus Maui in the group, and I thought, this will be a great opportunity because Gus had spoke to me about a month earlier saying that he had some potential sponsors, members from the Kitchener-Westmount area that were looking to possibly help sponsor a tour player, myself particularly, and when I saw Gus's name on the draw, I thought this is a great opportunity for me to play with Gus and show him how well I can play and that I'm worthy of this sponsorship opportunity. So I asked Heather to pair me with Gus, and she did. And then I went out and played the tournament. And on the front nine, I had 5 sevens, four cards, and it was horrible. I shot 49 on the front nine in this Ontario PGA event. And I'm telling you, I walked to the 10th tee going, oh, no. Like, I was worried. I'm not kidding you. I was worried if I could break 100. But I was like, whatever it takes, I've got to show that I can play. And I turned, and I returned in 30, which was great.
Wow.
Because I was able to keep it under 80. But it was, the dollar signs had all fluttered away on that front nine.
Do you remember that experience and how it felt?
Yeah, so, you know, that's a great comment, because that's not so good, because you shouldn't be thinking of negative stuff, but I can still to this day get that feeling, and it's a very uncomfortable, warm feeling, like, that sort of fight or flight syndrome, if you will, and it wasn't a great feeling, but I've kept it, that thought, you know, I remember that story, so it wasn't great, unfortunately.
Ken, tell us about the Canadian seniors this year. We brought a couple of new sponsors, Mr. Lou, Cleveland Golf, and we also had the new golf course, Rattlesnake Point, and you were paired in the feature pairing with Jim Rutledge, the winner, and Hall of Famer Dave Barr. And Rutledge, he said numerous times that he felt that he played better because he's playing with great players like yourself and Dave Barr. And I believe it was the second round. You guys combined made 19 birdies in 18 holes, and someone said it was like watching a Skins game. But tell us a bit about the event and about playing with those two players.
Well, the event was great. I mean, it's been a step in the right direction for us. Mr. Lube coming on board as a sponsor has really helped elevate the event. And there's the upside going forward is very promising. So their involvement has helped us tremendously. Obviously, playing at Rattlesnake was in great shape. The golf course was really well received. I played in the Pro-Am, actually, with the guys from Cleveland Golf and Timmy Armstrong. I really enjoy his company. You know, he was a rep for me for years, and we have a hockey connection as well. So it's, you know, I was really pleased that they were involved in the program as well. So from that standpoint, it was really good to play with Rudd and Dave. I mean, it had been a long time. I did see Rudd a couple of years ago when he qualified for the PGA Tour and played his first event in Hawaii. I was out to see him there. But I haven't played with either one of them in probably close to 15 years anyways, probably 20 since the last time I played with them. And so it was a lot of fun to go back out. It was like we had just played yesterday kind of thing. We were kibitzing all the way around, talking. And I think the most important thing impressive thing in playing with them, though, is there's a real flow to everything that goes on in the golf course when you're playing with players at that level. I mean, everybody reads the greens at the same time. They're very respective of through lines or future lines, so there's no stepping in the way of other guys. Club selections and things all happen well and properly. So it has a real flow. And so that's really what happened is that first day when Rutt shot 67, he should have been 62. He didn't make anything, and he hit it close. He just two-putted all the par fives and hit a wedge on one hole to a foot. He really should have been 62 in the first round as well. And by the time we got to the second round, this flow worked so well for everybody that it was just like taking steps, one step after another, to another birdie, and everybody was just riding along. And it was like we were on top of a big wave, just carried it all the way into shore sort of idea. It was pretty neat. But so it's been fun to have played with them again. And I'm seeing Rudd occasionally at the Champions Tour qualifiers. I've been getting through the first stage of the qualifyings and seeing Rudd at the final qualifiers. And so we've been getting together a little bit. And, I'm looking forward to seeing him more and more that way as well. But he's such a good player, and obviously so is Dave. It was a treat to play with him. It really was a lot of fun.
Now, Ken, finally, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. Mo Norman was one of your mentors, as I mentioned earlier, and he's an 8-time winner of the Canadian PGA Seniors, as well as a 3-time winner of the Ontario PGA Seniors. But everyone's got a Mo story, and I'd love to hear your best Mo story.
Wow. I don't know if I have a best. Well, yeah, I do. I have a really good story. I've played a lot with Mo. I'm not exaggerating to say that it would be very close to 1,000, if not in 1,000 rounds of golf, because we played when I came up on the Canadian Tour together. We played as partners in the Ontario PGA Rolex, the old Rolex Pro. We always played practice rounds on the tour events together. He taught me about course management so much. It was unbelievable. And then, of course, we always played practice rounds. And on his way home from Florida through Augusta, he would stop in at 20 Valley, and we would always have a game each spring. And then he'd come down through the summer for visits. So we played a lot together. I used to MC his clinics for him, and he'd have a different answer every week for how he controlled his ball flight and stuff. It was pretty special. But I think the best thing I can remember from playing with him is that he hit we were playing at Royal Oak back in the day when we used to the CPJ used to have their apprentice program, and we owned the golf course down there. And Mo and I went out to play one evening. We used to play a worst shot or a worst ball game. And if I could shoot in say 40 for 9 holes at 4 over par, I was playing pretty good, quite frankly. And I went out this one evening with Mo and played the back nine, the old back nine, and I shot 1 over par with 2 balls, and Mo shot 3 under. Or 1 under, excuse me, with 3 balls. And he literally hit every green in regulation and two-putted all the balls. And on the 16th hole, which was a par 5, he hit a wedge shot. The worst wedge shot into the green was a 3-footer, and he made all 3 from 3 feet for his birdie.
Wow.
And, I mean, that was incredible, quite frankly. And like I say, if you get anywhere near par with a couple of balls, you're playing really, really well. To see a guy, I've never seen anybody ever come under par before, and I've played that game a ton of times since, so I say that would be probably my favorite image of Mo playing wise. So I'll go with that as my best Mo story.
Awesome. Well, Kenny, you've got a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of passion for the PGA, and you're a good friend of Scotty and I's, and you've been a help for sure over the years. But congrats on yet another trophy. That could be close to 1,000 as well. But keep it up, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. No problem.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Kenny Tarling, Scotty, what a guy, eh? Unbelievable. Pretty good story there about Mo as well. And yeah. I don't think he's kidding about playing with him 1,000 times. You play with Ken, not 1,000 times, but you probably play with Ken 10 or 12 times least.
Yeah.
And he always tries to help you out with his game with your game. And
no, he's a definite student of the game.
Yeah.
And, it shows, with his He's actually down right now when we were talking to him. He's down in Niagara Falls getting a lesson from John White, who actually played in the event. And
wow,
what it spurred that on from was I do a lot of video at our events. And yep, so I filmed a bunch of Ken's swings. And John White called him and said, Ken, did you watch the video? Like, did you see your swing? And Ken's like, yeah, I know. And so John's like, well, come down. One of the things I guess John is really well known for is the golf machine. He's okay, a student of the golf machine. Like, yep, he knows the whole deal. Similar to what Sean Foley's doing, actually. So he, you know, he said, Ken, come down and we'll sort it out. So that's why Ken was in some good spirits there. I think he actually figured it out.
Excited, yeah. Well, going from the playing the game to the rule side of the game, probably a side that doesn't get as much spotlight as maybe it should. Joining us now from Golf Canada, Brent McLaughlin, who's the director of rules, competitions, amateur status. Brent, thanks for joining us. You know what, it's been amazing, the new launch of some of these events with the obviously the new sponsors and the new push to make them as bigger and better. The CN Women's Open, the RBC Canadian Open has really put you, your team into a major spotlight. But next week, getting ready for the CN Women's Open at St. Charles, I think you're heading out today. Tell us a bit about what you'll have to do before you get ready for that event next week.
Well, you know, like you said, these events keep getting better and better, and we're blessed on the side of the Women's Open to have such a strong field. I mean, we barely, Sean Van Keschner, our tournament director, won't like me saying it, but you barely have to recruit. I mean, the players love coming up here. There's a great purse involved. CN puts on a wonderful show, and Sean and his staff run a great event. And getting ready, I mean, there's actually two golf courses that we have to get ready up in Winnipeg. There's obviously St. Charles will be the host venue for the tournament, but we also have Elmhurst that is hosting the qualifier on Monday. So there's about 60 or so players registered from, you know, the Futures Tour and from RCN Canadian Women's Tour and a couple amateurs trying to qualify at Elmhurst on Monday. And all the standard preparations, you know, hole locations and marking the hazards and conditions of the competitions and the notices that go out to the players, the next 4 or 5 days will be spent doing that.
Well, you know, we finished our Canadian PGA Women's Championship yesterday, actually, and Laura Bavard of Grosse Ile, Michigan, kind of a weird, because it has a French spelling, but it's pronounced completely English or American, I guess. I was trying to, yeah, no, but so she wins a spot next year in the Women's Open, and she said to us when in the interview, said, I can't wait to play next year. I've heard so many awesome things about that event, and I'm not even on the LPGA Tour yet, so it shows how fast the word's traveling. But we want to talk to you a little bit about some rules and about being a rules official, and obviously it's coming under a huge spotlight with that happened last week with Dustin Johnson. First off, did you see it, and did the boys down south make the right call?
I did see it, and you're right. I mean, anytime something bad happens, it seems like the rules in any sport is brought to the forefront. And again, just a terrible, unfortunate incident with Dustin. And I think he's ultimately been a fan favorite ever since he blew up earlier in the year on the final round, and then obviously having this happen to him. Unfortunately, the guys did get it right. I mean, there was a notice that was issued, and the notice to competitors basically outlines things that are unique to that particular golf course and other conditions that might come into play. You know, at other events, it might be the use of distance measuring devices or how we're going to handle transportation or shuttling players, whatever it may be. But in this notice that went out to all the players, it said, you know what, we're at a golf course here with literally hundreds of sandy areas, and some of them are inside the ropes and some of them are outside the ropes. And unfortunately for Dustin, whether, you know, in the heat of the moment or in the battle, he just didn't realize where he was. And you can't blame the guy. I mean, it was definitely a pressure situation. And it's so unfortunate, but the rules are clear. Once you ground your club, you're done. So it was unfortunate. I did watch it, and I knew we'd be questioned about it after the fact.
Now, Brent, you know, there was a couple of scenarios that were brought up, and I'll go through two of them with you. One scenario was, you know, could the committee have done anything to help Dustin Johnson? So that, you know, for example, someone that really doesn't understand the rules of golf, which, you know, for the most part, a lot of people have a hard time with the rules, and, you know, for a number of reasons. One of them is how extensive they are. But was there anything the committee could have done would be my first question. And the second part of that would be, you know, sometimes rules officials get a bad name for, you know, being sort of the guys that hide in the bushes and look for the violations as opposed to, you know, trying to help players understand the rules a bit better. And there was a comment made, you know, the rules official in that group, you know, every group had a rules official, or at least the last, you know, six or seven groups had a senior rules official. people sort of pointed to that rules official and said, you know, why didn't he get in there and stop Dustin from doing that? Is that permitted by a rules official?
Well, the first part of your question, the rules do cover it, and everybody refers back to equity and doing what's fair. And there is a rule in the rule book called equity just for that reason. If there's a point that's not covered by the rules, then a committee can rule in equity and do what's fair. The only time they can do that is if it's not covered. And unfortunately, this was covered by the rules. And a committee has no power to waive or modify a penalty of less than disqualification, which in this case was a two-stroke penalty. So they had no choice but to impose that penalty. Their hands were completely tied. To the second part of the question, you know, it is there's an argument to be made about how an official intervenes and how a rules official interacts with the players. Generally speaking, rules officials don't get involved leading up to a stroke. You know, if a rules official had come up to him and as he's getting ready to play a shot and interrupted him and said, hey, you know, just so you know, you're in a bunker, Dustin could have taken it the other way and said, you know what, I know where I am and thanks for interrupting my routine. So there's an argument both ways, but you're right. I mean, if the official is up there and it is an area such that it was outside the ropes, people walking all around it, a quick note to the player as he approached, probably before anything even got settled in, to say, you know, Dustin, this is one of those areas that we covered on the notice and it is a bunker, and because he is in the heat of battle and there's no requirement to do so, but boy, it would have saved a lot, I'm sure, had somebody interacted.
Now, just to follow up to that question, when you're conducting the rule seminars, is, you know, the types of people that you, or the rules officials that you get, is that something that, you know, as the game is evolving, that, you know, because when I'm playing junior golf, like there was this fear of rules officials, right? Like we were in fear of the rules officials, and you sort of wanted to tread lightly. And, you know, as I've grown older, and I'm actually a level 3 myself, so I, you know, I'm gaining a better understanding and respect for rules officials. But, you know, is there ever any thought at the table of the higher up rules officials to say, you know, maybe we should be, you know, breeding rules officials to be a bit more player friendly and you know, really try and help them as much as we can, as opposed to maybe the older, you know, maybe a misconception of, you know, the rules officials are out to get you.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. And you know what, we've actually implemented a program, and you mentioned that you were level 3, and that's the first step that we've done is basically, before, you'll remember not too long ago, even going back 10 years, we only had, similar to the USGA, the one level of certification. You could be a novice to the rules or an expert rules official, and you went to the one seminar. And I know from our standpoint, we used to have the crew that would, you'd start at page 1 of the rule book and you'd read every page off the slides, and people would pass out in the back from boredom. They wouldn't absorb anything. And we thought that wasn't working. And so we created 3 levels to get people through to the final stage, which is level 4, which is what you'd have at a PGA Tour event. And that level 4 seminar deals strictly now with scenarios and interaction. And we've actually built some indoor scenarios with a water hazard and with cart paths and bunkers. So we can actually learn how people interact with players, because like you said, it is so important. And we've never taught that before. People would do excellent on the written exam. They'd get 95%, but you'd put them on the golf course, and like you said, they were either like patrol officers out there waiting for something to happen, or they had no bedside manner when it came to giving a ruling. And ultimately, we're out there to assist players and to help them along and try to figure out a way to get them out of whatever situation they're in with the least resistance. So mm-hmm. You're right. We've really tried to do that. I think we've accomplished it over the last couple of years. And it's so important in a situation like that to train people how to actually give the ruling. It's one thing to know it, but another thing to give it.
Brent, is being a rules official in golf the hardest out of any other sport? I mean, I've heard some people argue that basketball is so tough because, you know, at a high level, the guys are so big, they're so close, there's no contact really, so it's so tough to kind of differentiate between the two non-calls and calls. But in golf, I've heard guys say that golf's so hard because you're called as a rules official to come over to a spot that you weren't even there to see the infraction. Now you have to tell them an answer right away.
Yeah, I guess there's two sides to that. One would be, you're exactly right, 9 times out of 10, you haven't seen anything, you haven't witnessed anything, you're called into action and asked to rule on something that you really don't have a background on, so you need to ask the right questions and act like a detective. The pro of being a rules official as opposed to basketball or hockey or another sport is that you do have time and you do have outs in a basketball game. You can't really stop play and, you know, things happen so quickly and you've got to make a judgment call on the spot. At least with the rules, as a rules official, you can, if you don't know the situation, you can call for help. You can check TV coverage. You can stop play. You can have them hit two balls. There's a million things that can happen to get it right. And I think you'd see that with the Dustin Johnson at the end when he came right over and put his arm on his shoulder. He knew because he had probably spoken to the other rules officials and they were in their the trailer trying to figure things out, what was going to happen. And you can see the time that it took to go in there as we were all watching on TV. But I would say from a testing standpoint, the rules of golf, because they are universal and uniform throughout the world, learning them and interpreting them is probably one of the hardest things to do for anybody, even if you are an avid golfer. You know, everybody says they know the rules, but it's highly unlikely that they actually do.
Now, the average golfer doesn't play by the rules. We all know that. Does it really matter? I mean, my dad, for example, he and I had a great time played up north in Muskoka about 2 weeks ago, and you know, he was playing great for a while there, and he's hitting a few shots, and just the way he is, he plays golf once or twice a year, and you know, if he can't find his ball off the tee, I'm not going to tell him to go back to the tee and hit it again, right? Like, you know, we're in Muskoka, it's Saturday afternoon, looking forward to get back to the dock somewhere. But is that why we see club championships where people shoot 12, 15 shots higher and they can't figure out why they're doing it?
It's a great point, and it's almost at a stage now where we should have two kind of – and we already do have two sort of sets of rules, one for competition where it is by the book, but – it's not unlike playing hockey with the guys on the weekend playing shinny hockey. You don't really, you may or may not call offsides, or if something happens, you just dump the puck in. You don't play by the rules, but you have a great time and there's no harm, no foul. And same with golf. You know, you can imagine if you go to a high end public facility or something and you're walking back to the tee to hit a shot and you're on a 5.5 hour pace round, you'd be strangled. So yeah, there are two standards and that's okay, but it's a valid point when you, competition golf is so different. It's and you said it earlier, with the rules officials being around, there's people on the course that you're not used to seeing. There's oftentimes an official starter where, you know, now they're announcing your name. And, you know, it's a different mentality, and people do tend to shoot high scores. We see it at our amateur events where club champions are offered exemptions into, say, the Canadian Amateur. And they're great golfers at their club and may have won their club championship, but when they tee it up in a huge event, it's they never seem to do well.
Well, I've been there, definitely. And one question that I wanted to ask you about, just about being a rules official, if you can recount in your head or in your mind sort of what was the most awkward or difficult ruling that you've ever had to give out.
Well, I've had a couple. I will say my very first ruling, and I'm embarrassed to say now, but I guess we all do it. It was a completely wrong ruling, and there was a girl. I remember I was newly certified. I was with the Ontario Golf Association at the time, and I was a rules official, and it was the Ontario Ladies Amateur. And the girl called me over on the 18th green, and there was a ball mark on the green, and her ball lied off the green, and so she asked me if she could repair that ball mark on the green. And you can repair damage to the green through a ball mark or an old hole plug at any time, no matter where your ball lies. But I told her, no, you couldn't. You got to play over it. You got to hit this chip shot over this ball. And she was like, are you sure? I want to putt it. And I said, nope. And I was firm in my belief, and the poor girl had to hit that shot. And I watched it. I went back and I looked in the decisions book, and clearly I was wrong. And I had to go apologize to her and explain in the future she could, and her parents. And thankfully she got up and down, so I didn't feel that bad. And more recently, I just had not a heated confrontation, but a debate at the Telus Skins game. I was fortunate enough to be the rules official out west for the Telus Skins game, and Retief Goosen was in a temporary movable obstruction, which are grandstands and TV towers that are erected just for the tournament. And he didn't like what I was saying and where he thought he had to go. And with about 5,000 people on that hole, it was quite the interaction, but ultimately I made him go where I thought he had to go, and he dropped where I wanted him to.
So, who was right? Were you right, or was he right?
I was right. I'm gonna stick with my guns. I was right, and ultimately we talked about it after in the clubhouse over a drink, and all was fine.
Because we actually have him on next as our next guest, so we'll ask him about you and how he feels about it. Yeah,
I'm sure he'll remember it.
Yeah. Well, Brent, you know, I'm going to say something right now, but I'm not saying because I don't want you to give me a free drop somewhere. I'm saying because I actually believe it. But I think you're one of the best in the business, and in Canada, we're obviously lucky to have you. We kind of lean on you a little bit, and we actually hired one of your proteges, Adam LeBrun, working for us now at the Canadian PGA. He's done a great job. So obviously you guys are doing something right over there with the rules. But thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. And keep up the great work.
Thanks very much. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brent.
Well, Scott, there he is. Hey, Brent McLaughlin. I hope he follows you around the rest of your life and just gives you penalties all over the place. No, I'm just kidding. It's true, though, right? I mean, you play golf with some guys, and because you're a rules official, you and I always play a match. We're fairly similar golfers. So, you know, there's times where I might be a little more whatever about the rules sometimes, and you're trying to give me the right line. But it's true. Like, the average golfer, I don't really care.
It's a bit of a burden in some respects. Like, you know, I played in a tournament a few weeks ago, and playing with this kid, he had no idea what was going on. So I was like rules official on every hole. And it was just like, you know,
you're trying to play at the
same
time.
Someone just mentioned, oh yeah, you should play with Scott. He works at PGA, knows the rules. And I'm just like, oh man, don't say that. Like, I don't want to, you know what I mean? But, to be honest, it's awesome. Like it's something that I take pride in. I like knowing the rules. And just like Brent, I'm in a bit of a tougher situation because I'm dealing with our members all the time. Right? And so I'm getting into ruling situations where, you know, this guy could be a future board of director and I'm, I gave one to John Rushnell. It was an incorrect ruling and it was a stroke and he went off and I actually, it's happened to me twice. One of them was when it wasn't as bad. The player was actually withdrawing from the event anyway, but he had a rules, what we thought was a violation at the time. And it turned out it didn't happen, but there's a lot of pressure. Like at the PATs a few weeks ago, like we had a scenario and there's a lot of pressure you feel, especially when you're not as confident like Brent is, on rule situations, and it makes it really difficult.
Well, but, and even the PAT, that's really, this might be a little bit over the top, but that's someone's livelihood in a way, right? Like they're thinking they pass this test, they have a chance for a new job, a bigger job, and one shot could mean the difference of promotion or no promotion, right?
I mean, the rules violations that you're seeing at the PAT are more, you know, a lot of them are to do with caddies, you know, caddies going in the extension of line of play, whether it be in front or behind the player, you know, on the putting green, especially, and not moving. Or you see a lot of it, you know, and with male or with females, whether they have their caddies, whether female or male, lining them up and then not moving, and they don't know the rules. Right. And so, you know, last year we actually had to disqualify a person, some strokes. So we made it abundantly clear on the first tee, guys, you can't do that. And I saw a kid doing it, actually at the PAT. So what I did is, and it was an inadvertent sort of thing, and there's no penalty for inadvertent, but if it continues to happen, then it becomes not inadvertent. So just went up to the player's caddy and said, hey, I don't know, I didn't see exactly if you were behind that player, but if you were, that's probably not a good line to be in. If you were, it would be a penalty. I didn't see that you were, right? You give the player the benefit of the doubt to start. But, and it was good to see that, Brent, and that's what they're doing. And that's sort of why I brought it up, right? Is that they're teaching rules officials how to, you know, communicate. And there's an old thing, you know, accountants being rules officials, right? So kudos to Golf Canada, Brent, and they're doing an awesome job. I can say firsthand.
I think it's really cool. I think that, as you mentioned about that, they used to be pretty much all classroom, you know, all text, deal. And now I can imagine they probably have at their office set up. Someone comes into the room, then they've got a fake cart path, they've got a fake water hazard, and they have a player who's maybe one of their Team Canada players that may not know the rules all that well, but they're great talents. They just, some people, and I've seen guys before, I've been at enough events or I've caddied at enough events where no matter how good the player is, sometimes they're just great players. They've got no clue about the rules, really.
Yeah.
Aside from the typical rules, right? Mm-hmm. But it's pretty cool. I think you'll see a whole new wave of rules officials. And
for sure. I mean, even at the rules officials, they have the PowerPoint presentations, and they've actually got PGA Tour footage of like different rules violations. Like if you remember the one with the Steve Lowry's ball at TPC Sawgrass when the the seagull came in and lifted the ball and won on Davis Love. He was on the 16th hole, I believe, or it may have been on the 17th, and he was taking practice stroke with his putter, hit his ball, like different scenarios. So it's actually really interactive, and it's not like Brent was saying, the original where you fall asleep.
Yeah. Well, I think it's good. I think and one last point before we go here, I think, Brent makes a good point about having, there's rules for, there's basically two sets of rules, the average golfer rules in a way. And, you know, he's not saying cheat. He's just saying, you know, play to what that your scenario or your golf caliber, course, your caliber type
like
thing, right?
The better you get at golf, the more the rule you abide by the rules,
and I think a rule of thumb would be if you're going to play in tournaments, if you can play by all the rules before you get to the tournament, you're probably going to score closer to what you're what you usually shoot. And you're not going to be surprised. And it happens every club championship where the range is packed the night before. Guys hit one bucket of balls all year. Now he's hit 10 in one night.
Yeah.
And you can't figure out why he's a 10 handicap and usually shoots 82 and now he's shooting 106, right? And it's just, it's amazing. But anyway, great stuff great show, Scotty. We'll see everybody next time on the Canadian PGA Radio Show.